Presentation is by Don Frazier, Cotton Diseases, Approaches to Identifying and Utilizing Resistance in Commercial Cotton Breeding Program.
Good morning. As Jason said, I'm going to talk a little bit today about Monsanto's approach to identifying and utilizing resistance in a commercial breeding program. So as everybody in this room knows, key traits in cotton breeding include lint yield and fiber quality, but definitely disease and insect resistance is also an important part of the package. At Monsanto, we're using, I guess, three different approaches to meet this target. First of all, field-based evaluation, screening nurseries where we actually set up the nurseries specifically to evaluate for disease resistance, and these may be in targeted sites in different parts of our, either in the U.S. or beyond the U.S., but they're specifically set up with the purpose of generating disease data information. Secondly, we look at opportunistic data. So as you all know, if you have a particular pathogen show up in a given field at some time, that you take the opportunity to gather the data where it becomes available, and we certainly do that. And we also have an approach where we use what we call sentinel disease checks as indicators of epidemics. Basically, all that means is we plant a bunch of susceptible lines at all of our, not all, but many of our locations across the U.S. and beyond. And we use these susceptible checks as indicators of potential epidemics or diseases occurring in that field. And then after evaluating those on a weekly basis, we can then go into any given location and we collect data from those specific locations. So in addition to our field-based evaluation, we also look at controlled environment screening. And finally, we look at markers, not finally, but and additionally, we look at markers for disease traits. So those are our three main approaches. Monsanto definitely has plant health as a priority. We have the largest indoor controlled environment facility in the world based in St. Louis. And the facility there covers acres at this point, and it's also currently in expansion, so it's getting even bigger. We have an extensive field testing network with targeted disease screening nurseries in many locations globally. We have a multi-stage disease screening approach, which encompasses field, growth chamber, and markers for multiple pathogens at different stages in the development of varieties. And we have markers, which have definitely improved the speed and accuracy of disease trait evaluation where they're available. So controlled environment screening, as I said, we have a really fabulous facility in St. Louis, and we also have some other facilities outside of St. Louis where we can screen in controlled environment facilities. They can accommodate everything from seedlings to full-size plants, many different automated chambers with individual control settings, temperature and humidity, etc. And this allows us to evaluate for many different pathogens because of their flexibility, including verticillium wilt, target spot, fusarium, alternaria, and ramularia. In addition to the controlled environment growth chambers, we also have phenotypic screening using screen houses. And these are, they're larger, they can accommodate a lot more plants on a bigger scale. They also can accommodate plants all the way from seedlings through adult plants. They tend to be more precise because you're mimicking the field situation better, but you're still controlling the environment, so you have precision, but you still have this. It's much more related to the field environment. You have flexibility of artificial inoculation methods in this situation, and you also have flexibility of experimental design. So they're pretty useful for setting up large-scale controlled environment screens. So in terms of field screening, this can be everything from seedling diseases through to adult plants, fusarium wilt at adult plant stage. It can be anything on a small plot scale, or it can be an entire field that we're evaluating. And it can be a natural infestation, or it can be artificially inoculated. It covers the gauntlet in terms of what we can do in the field. So we have several different approaches to creating environments that are effective disease screening environments. The first is obviously to identify locations or fields where our particular pathogen of interest occurs at high levels, and we can use this natural infestation as a source of inoculum. I mean, one of the best examples is verticillium in terms of a soil-borne pathogen. We can basically just find hotspot fields and use those as our screening sites. We can also amend soil by the addition of pathogen-infected or infested propagules, basically to ensure that we have the inoculum there and that we have a uniform inoculum for our disease screening. And we can also apply inoculum to test blots by spraying or other physical methods. Once we've created, hopefully created, our good disease epidemic, we then have in-house web-based disease apps that really help with our disease data collection. These disease apps are really very good because they provide us with tools in the field that can both help with diagnosis and they can also help with data collection. It helps also with standardizing our collection from one location to another or one rater to another. It provides us with the tools to do that. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later. So obviously our third, once we have our controlled environment studies and our field screening environments, we also have the use of molecular markers. And these have definitely improved our accuracy and efficiency of breeding for resistance where they're available for traits such as bacterial blight or verticillium wilt. So this slide basically demonstrates how we've moved beyond historically how we used to evaluate for disease resistance into the next generation, so to speak, where previously we would have had to screen germplasm to search for the resistance and to any important diseases and pests. The success was dependent on the breeder's ability to screen. Then you had to move the resistance into your commercial products, and it could be a long, slow, tedious process. And possibly you may incur just small incremental improvements in performance. So now we've sort of supercharged this, so to speak, with the use of things like the seed chipper, use of markers, automated marker analysis. All of those tools combined allow us to have rapid and accurate identification of resistance genes, and then we can associate this with screening in the field. We can have focused integration of the resistance genes into our commercial products, and you can also have targeted stacking of existing and novel resistance genes. So the combination of the tools that we have available definitely improve our efficiency and our ability to develop the resistant products. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about a disease that we're just currently sort of getting into and the steps in the process involved in evaluating for resistance to target spot caused by Carinospora. And anytime we start a project like this, there's various steps that we have to work through. We want to, first of all, develop the methodology for data collection and the rating scales. And as I said, when we have multiple people evaluating diseases in different locations, we need to make sure that we have standardized data collection and rating scales that everybody who's rating for this particular pathogen is following. We want to develop a methodology for field inoculation. As many people know, you know, in some years we have epidemics that are naturally occurring, and that's great, and we can really get some good data in those kind of years. But we want to ensure that year in, year out, we have the potential or we have environments to screen for a given pathogen. So we want to develop methodology for field inoculation that ensures that we have an epidemic each year, if possible. We'd really like to develop growth chamber assays that mimic the resistance response in the field environment, because that obviously means that we can actually do evaluations independent of the field as well. And then once we have all these steps set up, we want to evaluate our germplasm at multiple stages in the developmental pipeline and decide what we're going to do from that point, whether it's to move towards markers or what. So this is just a picture of the basic methodology in establishing an epidemic for Carinospora in the field that we've been working with. You have large-scale inoculum preparation here. We basically prepare vats of the Carinospora cassicola. We then took it to the field, and we decided that winding the plants was the best way to go in terms of having an entry point for the pathogen. So we actually drove the high boy sprayer through the plots first, or through the field first, actually, and scarred up the plants. And then we went back and applied inoculum over the top to actually generate disease in the field. And we were able to get pretty good symptoms developing from this method. So as I said, once you've got your epidemic in the field, whether it be, this happened to be in Hartsville, South Carolina, but it could have been anywhere. We also want to go and rate in the field, and we want to have a standardized way to do this. And we have this customized disease app that anyone who's rating the disease can take to the field. And it has pictorial guides that go along with each of the different scales, different increments in the scale. So if you're unfamiliar with exactly what corresponds to what in the rating scale, you have a picture that associates the level of disease in the field with that given rating number. So with that, we can actually gather data that we know is relatively uniform and consistent across different raters and different environments, and we can use this data to determine the level of resistance that we have to this pathogen in our germplasm. Also, moving on a little bit to an example of where we can use markers is, and Mustafa already talked about this with regards to phytogen, but we also at Monsanto can use markers for our marker-assisted selection to select bacterial blight-resistant lines. Obviously, there are public markers available for bacterial blight, and we can identify resistant haplotypes and susceptible haplotypes and use these just to screen our lines for resistance to bacterial blight and identify the lines in our pipeline that have resistance, that have the markers for bacterial blight resistance. So basically, all of these examples that I've talked about, whether it be in the field, whether it be markers or controlled environment studies, they all combine together the combination of automated technologies such as seed chipping, markers, DNA analysis, and then it all goes back to the field and phenotypic screening in the field combined with yield and agronomic performance. All of these steps allow us to actually advance superior genetics with the disease package in them that we want ultimately. And this, all these different tools and all these different steps do help improve the efficiency of our selection process. As I said, one of the other things that we tend to focus on is we want to have continuous screening of our material through different stages of the pipeline. So everything from when we develop populations early on all the way to pre-commercial and commercial, we want to ensure that the lines that we are actually commercializing do have the resistance in them that we say they do. So we can actually use either markers or a combination of markers and growth chamber evaluations or growth chamber and field evaluations, basically at different stages in the pipeline to ensure that the products that we are releasing have the disease package we want them to have. And finally, because Monsanto is a global company, we have the, and we realize that there are common disease problems in different parts of the world, we can actually use a lot of our global pathology efforts to deliver solutions on in different places around the world. So, for instance, if we're working in the U.S., we may have information that we can use to work on a problem in India or Australia or Brazil, just depending on the pathogen. And we do this primarily we can share disease data and methodologies and information across regions and countries. So maybe the actual problem itself may be slightly different in India than it is in the US, but we can actually share some of our methods or some of the information that may be helpful in different parts of the world. We can share sources of resistance, if applicable, and we can also use our centralized resources to more efficiently tackle problems. So for instance, if we have markers being run in St. Louis, they could just as equally apply to problems that may be occurring in India or Australia as well as in the US. So in summary, Monsanto does have a complete approach to evaluating and selecting for resistant disease resistance in its germplasm. We incorporate use of field screening, growth chamber tests, and markers specific for disease traits to select the best germplasm to advance through different stages of the pipeline, and we make sure that we actually screen at different stages in that pipeline. And the disease resistance breeding effort is a global one that we can actually use the most efficient methods and screening environments to select resistant germplasm, and at the same time it enables us this cross-exchange of information, data and techniques to all the different regions that we work in. And with that, I have time for some questions.
Plenty of time for questions.
Yeah.
You use a marker approach with your Verticillium wilt program?
That's where we are. We're starting that right now.
Okay, so you don't currently have developed markers? Or, no. Okay. What, out of curiosity, what kind of material, since we don't really have a good strong source of resistance in upland cotton, what kind of material or what's your approach to try to develop markers for a disease where the there's not known good resistance?
I mean, really, to be honest, right now we're really at just the screening level in terms of our own germplasm. I can't really answer the question because I don't think we've got to the next step.
With the information you get, say, up an emerging disease or say target spot, and you're screening, how do you make a decision based upon what you find? You just at this point. Just note that some of the lines are more susceptible or more resistant, or are you actually not advancing lines based upon what you find?
So in terms of whether we target spot is very early in that process, and at this point we're still just screening things and trying to determine what we have in terms of levels of resistance. I think at some point, depending on the economics of it all, we may limit the lines we advance, depending on where they're going and how the footprint of target spots sort of evolves, I guess. But currently, we're not advancing lines because of their resistance to target spot. But maybe ultimately, depending on it all comes down to economics. So if ultimately it becomes a real economic issue, I'm sure there will be limitations on what we can advance.
But that's an example. But in terms of other diseases, are there some that are so uniform, so widespread, you say we can't advance that, or you say we're going to advance it?
Right. There are
use it in certain areas.
No, there are situations where we will not advance lines in a given area. I think Brazil is one example where if you don't have the level of resistance, then you can't sell the product. So yes, there are cases where we won't advance lines if they don't have the resistance.
What disease? Can you give an example of a disease in Brazil that would include that?
I think it's blue disease. Is that right, Cynthia?
Thank you.
Any more questions? Thank you, Don.
All right.